98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. 4 o'clock reset.
So what we like to do at 4 o'clock every day is hit the reset button on the show. Start it over and get you caught up on everything going on in sports, including our reactions to all the top stories in sports, starting with Major League Baseball Game 5, crucial Game 5 of the National League Championship Series.
The chess match game.
And what a shocker. It's tied 1-1 in the top of the sixth right now. An RBI single by Austin Barnes led to an unearned run against Brandon Woodruff, the reliever, the right-handed reliever who came into this game for Craig Counsell after starter Wade Miley faced one batter and threw five pitches. Miley wasn't hurt. Counsell just saw that Dave Roberts stacked his entire lineup with a bunch of right-handed hitters to counter the lefty Miley, and Counsell said, fine, I'm going to take my starter out after five pitches and put in a different reliever.
Well,
say, screw you, Dave Roberts. What you going to do about that?
Well, what Dave Roberts has is he's got Clayton Kershaw. He's pitching a good game. Six innings, three hits, one run, struck out eight. So Kershaw has kept him in a game. He gave up the run in the third. The Dodgers answered, like you just said, in the fifth. So they're in the sixth inning right now. It's 1-1. This series is tied 2-2. So going into this game, whoever wins this game gets a big advantage because then you're up 3-2 with just one to win.
Later tonight, it is Game 4 between Boston and Houston. The Red Sox lead the Astros 2-1.
And Porcello against Morton tonight in Houston at Minute Maid Park.
And by the way, Chris Sale will not be available to start Game 5 for Boston. That announcement was made pregame today. He's not over the stomach ailment. He'll start Game 6. I haven't seen who's going to start Game 5 for Boston, but it's not going to be Chris Sale.
The only way that affects him in some ways is that if he pitched in Game 5, he might be available in Game 7 for an inning or two. You know, if he pitches in Game 6, it's probably more unlikely that he could go in Game 7. It's possible. But look, we saw what the Red Sox, you know, did the last series against the Yankees. They put Sale in relief to close out the Yankees in a game. So, you know, Sale is a guy that they will go to him in a crucial situation in extra innings or late in the game in relief if they have to.
Cardinals injuries. The Cardinals getting ready to take on the Broncos tomorrow. Today, Steve Wilks announced Trey Boston, Mike Iupati, backup offensive lineman Jeremy Vunjevic are all out. Justin Pugh and Jamar Taylor are questionable for the game. That's a big one in Pugh. If he can't go, that means that your two starting guards and your backup guard are all out for this game against the Denver Broncos.
Deuce Latuie around somewhere? Or bring somebody in?
Maybe. Well, it might be a little late to sign him to the roster. Yeah. They're going to be thin at that spot. Even if Pugh can go, they're going to be thin at that spot tomorrow
against
the Broncos.
I am playing a lot of two tight end formations in this game if I'm Mike McCoy because I got to make sure I have my protection. I got a rookie quarterback out there who's the future of this franchise. I got Von Miller. I got Bradley Chubb. I mean, I got some guys who want to get after the quarterback. I need to make sure that I protect my quarterback in this game.
Jamal Crawford, as we turn our attention to the Phoenix Suns, officially signed today. Davon Reed officially waived. And as the Suns get ready for opening night against the Dallas Mavericks, and we are here at Talking Stick Resort Arena today, the question of who will be the starting point guard continues to loom over us here at the Suns Arena.
It's Isaiah Kanan, from what I'm being told, that they're going to start Isaiah Kanan, that Jamal Crawford is not ready to play, that they'll probably go a few practice. They want to get him a few practices under his belt. He's in shape, but they want to get him a few practices with the team before they end up having him play. So from what I've heard, they're going to start Isaiah Kanan at the point guard spot.
It's going to take us both a while to get used to that.
Yeah,
he changed it. No, that's fine. He's the one who changed it on us. That is our top story of the day. The Suns opener tonight, nationally televised, and it's not your garden variety opening day for the Phoenix Suns. And the reason why, and I know this is radio, but I'll give you the best, paint the picture as best I can. The reason why is that giant banner that's hanging over us here at Talking Stick Resort Arena inside the Casino Arizona Pavilion, the one featuring DeAndre Ayton wearing his number 22 jersey. For the first time, the Suns will debut their number one pick in a regular season game. We've never really been able to experience anything like this before.
Should have been Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Lou Alcindor at the time, right? Yeah. I mean, right?
The coin flip.
We wouldn't have had that, right? There'd probably be a couple championship banners in the rafters if that would have worked out that way. They did not get the coin flip did not go their way. Milwaukee got Lou Alcindor, and he ended up with the Lakers, and obviously the rest is history. But now they get themselves a franchise center, and man, everybody's so excited about this kid, and you've talked about it too. I mean, you know, the excitement and the interest with this team, a lot of it revolves around him and just how good he can be and how great he can be, and I'm excited too. I mean, I'll be at the game tonight. I want to be there for his debut. I was at the Cardinal game for Rosen's first game, and I want to be there to say I was here for DeAndre Ayton's first game, because I think the kid's going to be great.
Tonight, with his debut, James Jones, the acting general manager, the vice president of basketball operations, was on with us for his weekly visit, thinks that Ayton has the potential to be a double-double guy right out of the gate.
If you just watch him play, you know, he just plays the game with the love and a freedom that will allow him to be successful just about every night. He's relentless on the boards. He's selfless, but he's ultra-competitive. You know, when you're competitive like him, you'll fall into a bunch of stats.
But you know what? For me, I my excitement about Ayton, and believe me, I'm excited about DeAndre Ayton, but it really goes hand in hand with Devin Booker. Because it's
like a 1-2 punch.
Well, you can't do it by yourself in this league. I mean, you can't. I mean, LeBron James. Every LeBron James needs his Dwayne Wade or his
Batman
Kyrie
and Robin.
Irving. There's no. Every Shaq needs his Kobe. It's very difficult in today's NBA to think that you that just one guy is good enough for you to be a championship contender. Now, maybe you could argue LeBron James is that one guy, but for the most part, it requires at the very least a duo. So the idea that through all this mess, through 68 wins in the last 3 years, which, God, just makes my head hurt thinking about it, through all that, tonight is the start of Booker and Ayton. And it feels like, for the first time in a long time, the Suns are pointed in the right direction. It's going slow, but they're pointed in the right direction for the first time in a half decade, it feels like.
The Suns tanked for 3 years, okay? They did. And, you know, they may not come out and say, admit it, but we all know what the thought process was. The only way to get players like this was to draft them, that you weren't going to get these guys in free agency. And this is the truth, okay? The Suns believed that they could not get marquee players in free agency. They also believed that if they traded for a marquee player, that that guy would bolt after a year or two once he hit free agency, a la Kyrie Irving. Mm-hmm. So the Suns believed that the only way to get players like that was to be really bad and draft them. And that was it. Like, you could get players in free agency, but they couldn't. Like, they went after LaMarcus Aldridge. LaMarcus Aldridge. They've tried for other guys. It didn't work. They could get Jared Dudley in free agency. They could get Tyson Chandler or Trevor Ariza. They could get guys like that. And through trade, there was always the feeling that if they traded for a guy that only had 1 or 2 years left on his contract, that he was gonna that you were gonna give up a whole lot to get him, and he was gonna leave. Mm-hmm. So that's why they tanked. I mean, it's the truth. I know this for a fact. The reason why they tanked is because they didn't believe that they could get players of that caliber through free agency or through trades. So that's why they decided to do what they did. They had to get him through the draft. Well, now they got him. I mean, they got Booker through the draft. They got Josh Jackson through the draft. They got DeAndre Ayton through the draft. And if these three guys work out and pan out, they might have something special here.
They might. And if nothing else, the hope here is, whereas before they haven't been able to lure free agents here, top free agents, Ayton isn't enough by himself to lure them here. But if Ayton and Booker are as good as everybody thinks they can be together, that is good enough to lure free agents here. That is good enough to swing a trade for a Kyrie Irving and not worry about him bolting.
Yeah, did anybody go to Golden State before Stephen Clay got there?
Of course not.
And then Durant went there, right?
But as soon as those two made it cool and fashionable and successful to play for Golden State, man, they couldn't turn guys away.
Right.
Ideally, that's what happens here. It's not DeAndre Ayton by himself, but DeAndre Ayton and Devin Booker are so good together that guys around the league will want to come here. That is like the perfect. It's going to take a while to get there, but the fact that we're heading there makes me feel really, really good. The Cardinals' offense has struggled all season long. Less is more. Is that the solution to it? We'll talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show. John Gambadoro, Dave Burns, we are the Burns and Gambo Show, and we are live today from Talking Stick Resort Arena in the Casino Arizona Pavilion, where tonight at 7:30, the Phoenix Suns will open their schedule, open their 2018-19 season against the Dallas Mavericks in a nationally televised game and the beginning of the DeAndre Ayton era, and expectations might be low, but interest is certainly very high because of Ayton, because of Booker's return off the injury, because of Josh Jackson, all the new faces, and the idea that they are finally headed in the right direction with this. Expectations might be low, but interest is certainly high. You could probably say the same thing about tomorrow's Cardinals-Broncos game. Expectations are low, but
interest is high.
Interest is high because of everything. You disagree with that?
No, I think
expectations are low. I mean, it's two of the worst teams in the NFL.
Okay, I am genuinely interested in every Cardinal game because of Josh Rosen, and that's the truth. Every game he plays, I'm interested in watching. I don't know what the word is, because it's not the whole McCoy situation. I don't think it's an interesting. It's not like I'm interested in that, but there is a
intrigued,
a level of the unknown. Intrigued might work.
I mean, don't
look, you know me? I don't think this game matters. I think they're making a change.
I don't think
McCoy makes it out. That's my opinion. Okay, I don't know anything, but I'm saying I don't think McCoy is the offensive coordinator for this team much longer.
No, I don't think he is either. And I tend to agree with you that I don't know if there's a whole lot that can be done tomorrow night to avoid that. I do think that if they come out and light it up tomorrow, and that they've maybe, if they feel like they've stumbled onto the recipe for success, that it at least buys him another week against San Francisco before the actual bye week.
Yep.
That maybe that happens, but I tend to agree that, man, there's just been a lot of smoke about this, a lot of people talking, and at this point I just don't know if there's anything that could be done for Mike McCoy to avoid it.
We've led that charge, because I do think that something could happen here. I know we've led that charge on, you know, what could happen with Mike McCoy, but I think a lot of other people are speculating too, because the reality is that this offense is the worst offense in the National Football League in just about every single category over six games. Why do I need another game to determine it? You know,
and that's logical.
This isn't two games in. I could be patient two games in, three games in, four games in. Do I need to be patient six games in? I don't think so.
That does make a lot of sense, but Steve Wilks being a first-time head coach, and they might feel differently about it depending on what happens tomorrow night. I tend to agree with you, though, that it might not matter what happens tomorrow. Here's one thing that could happen tomorrow, and that is a simplification of the playbook. There was a really good story this morning on The Athletic from their beat writer and longtime Valley writer, Scott Bordeaux. And in it, Bordeaux had kind of a curious quote from Josh Rosen. And I'm going to read right from Bordeaux's story. One criticism of McCoy in Denver was that his playbook was too big, with up to 300 plays. Rosen hinted that might be an issue again, saying, quote, "When you are not playing efficiently, it has to be more simple for everyone involved so we can be on the same page. Sometimes you have to master a small portion to be decent at something. Right now, I feel that we have a lot of good offense, but we haven't mastered anything that we're really good at."
You got to be more like In-N-Out Burger.
Simplified menu?
Man, you just be great at making that one thing. Just be great at something. You don't need to walk into the, oh man, look at this menu. I mean, it's like going to a restaurant and having a menu with like 18 pages on it. Man, just have a good solid menu. Go into a restaurant, it's a nice menu. It's one page long or two pages, and it's got great food. I love that. And they got five great menu items. I mean, that's what it is. I mean,
Are you counting the secret menu at In-N-Out? Oh, you don't know about the secret menu, do you?
I know it's a secret menu, yeah.
It was a secret menu.
But I'm just saying that the restaurants just are really good at one thing.
But even then, it's still pretty limiting. It's not like you can really, you know, it's still just cheeseburgers and fries and things like that. But no, I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
Simplify it. But here's Rosen, rookie quarterback, who's already acknowledged that he's a little uncomfortable sort of speaking out about what he wants to do in this offense.
It's a fluid kind of situation. I think you got to earn the respect. I think I'm in the process. process of doing that. But I mean, I think we've got some great coaches, and they're asking for feedback, and I'm willing to give them that feedback. But you also got to kind of know your place as a rookie. So sort of finding that happy medium between taking as much as control as you sort of deserve for the rookie status you're in. However, I'll never shy away.
It's funny to think that Josh Rosen doesn't think he deserves to have that much of a say in this.
He wants to. You could tell.
Oh, he does.
He wants to. He just wants to say. Because didn't he say, I need to know every play I'm running before I run it?
I need to know why I'm running it.
I need to know why I'm running it.
Why this play is in the playbook. Why are you calling this play? I need to know why. I will not run a play unless I know why.
And I think he's running a lot of plays and he doesn't know why.
You think so?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Of course I do.
I think when you combine the quote in Bordeaux's story with that soundbite that I just played for you, it sort of paints the picture of a quarterback who wants to say, man, we really need to simplify this playbook. There's an awful lot here, and we just play better if we didn't have to think about so much, versus the, I'm a rookie, can I say that? Do I deserve to say that? And he's kind of toeing that line. I think we saw it on the field when they played that hurry up against Minnesota. It worked. Now, even Rosen himself said, hey, look.
Admitted that they may have been laying back a little bit.
Yeah, they were giving us the underneath stuff, all that stuff. And I'm sure that's accurate. But I do think he's sort of pushing for a simpler offensive system, one that pairs down the plays. We'll see tomorrow if he gets it or not.
Well, I think, once Leftwich takes over, or if it's Michael, one of those two, I mean, I think that what they'll do is you can't change a ton of the playbook. So if McCoy gets canned, if they decide that they don't want Mike McCoy anymore, it's not like you could say, okay, take that playbook, take that 300, take it and rip it up. Okay, that playbook's gone. We're going to install a new one. You can't do that. You're 68 games into the season. You can't do it.
I'm laughing the story. Remember the story about Bob Brenly when he took over for Buck Showalter?
Yes.
His first day as manager of the Diamondbacks, he took Buck's rule book, his manual for all the operating manual of being a player for the Arizona.
He threw
it in the garbage can. And he basically said, I have two rules. Work hard, show up on time.
Right.
Or something. Like, Bob, if you're listening, I'm sorry. I know I botched that. But he's like, I have two rules. That's it. This, we don't need this anymore. You're saying that can't happen when Byron Leftwich takes over for Mike McCoy?
You're saying that I don't have to turn the ketchup this way when I put it back on the table?
you're saying
that I don't have to have the mustard to the left and the ketchup to the right?
You're saying that I don't have to have my socks to here, so I can pull them to here?
So here's what's going to happen. If they do make a change of coordinator, okay, if they do make a change, it's not like you're going to throw out all the plays that McCoy ran. But what you can do is you can't change a ton, but you can add protections. You can add protections, which is one of the things I've been talking about for the last couple of weeks. You can add protections, and you could be bringing some creativity to the offense. Can you get rid of the whole playbook? No, absolutely not. There's not going to be able to put a playbook in midway through the season, a whole new one. But you can change protections on certain plays. You can work on that. That would be the main change.
If you're a fan of the Burns and Gambo show, but you don't always get to catch the Burns and Gambo show when you want, you really need to text the word podcast to 620-620 and let us deliver our show to you every single day. By texting podcast to 620-620, we're going to deliver our show to you daily on whatever device you use, Google Play, iTunes, doesn't matter. We've got it. We can support the format. Let us deliver our show to you, all the content, all of Gambo's inside information, the 4 o'clock reset. Everything we do, we'll give to you if you text the word podcast to 620-620. Subscribe to the Burns and Gambo podcast. We'd love to be able to give you the show that way every single day. It's gotten rave reviews, and we think you're going to like it too. He's one of the best wide receivers in the country. Where have you gone, N'Keal Harry? And are we going to see you tomorrow night? That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Let's go back to the Octane Community Studios, where Jordan Bird is standing by with an update on our Twitter poll question of the day.
Burns and Gambo need to know Twitter poll update, presented by Sanderson Ford.
All right, Jordan, what do we need to know today?
So with you guys being out at Talking Stick Resort Arena and it being the season opener, how many games do you think the Suns will win this season? 8% say 21 or fewer, 17% say 22 to 26, 38, 27 to 31 games, and 37% of the voters have said 32 or more games.
Boy, does anybody have the John Bloom prediction of 60 wins this year?
John Bloom has not predicted 60 wins.
He didn't predict 60?
No, he did not predict
50?
60 wins. What did he predict? 38?
38.
38. And then you accused him of doing things that are illegal in some states.
I love to tease Bloomer, but he did have the biggest projection out of all of us on a win total.
He did.
You know, to be
it's
honest
not
with
that
you,
much higher than yours. I mean, you think 30-31. He's got 38.
Vinny, was Bloomer's prediction 38? Was that what his prediction was? 38? Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I predicted a 10-game improvement. He's got a 17-game improvement.
He's got a 17-game improvement. That's a big improvement.
I hope he's right, man. I'll buy him lunch if he's right. Anywhere he wants to go.
Buy him a lot of lunch. Yeah, absolutely. ASU, we have not spent a lot of time. It's been a weird week with the quick turnaround for the Cardinals and opening night for the Suns and everything like that. So we haven't talked a lot about this ASU-Stanford game. Every time we have brought it up, though, we have mentioned just the kind of the enormity of it. And it's real simple. If ASU loses this game to Stanford tomorrow, they've got to win a road game to be bowl eligible.
Sure. They got six games left. They got to win three. That's it. Got to win three games to get bowl eligible. I mean, even if it's the Cheez-It Bowl here.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to play in a bowl game. I mean, the most important thing, as we've talked about, if you can get to a bowl game, it does give a coaching staff that's in their first year, it gives them 3-4 extra weeks to practice with their kids. I mean, it gives you 3 extra weeks of practice. So for this team that's playing a lot of young guys, it's a lot of extra practice time. You get to hold on to your kids for 3 more weeks. You get to practice with them and you get them better. You get to work on them. You get to see them. So there is a major benefit to getting to a bowl game, even if it's a bowl game that's, you know, not one of the premier bowl games that come out of the Pac-12. You get that practice time, and that's what they're hoping to get.
Normally, it shouldn't be that big of a deal to say you have to go win a game on the road, but ASU struggled with that. And they still have to go to USC, who's never lost at home under Clay Helton. They still have to go to Oregon. That's going to be a daunting place to play. And they still have to go to Tucson. Who knows what's going to happen when they go down there. You don't want to leave it to chance like that. Beat Stanford at home and at least put yourself in a position where you don't need that road win to get bowl eligible. But the Stanford team coming in, Bryce Love, sounds like he's going to play. I know they're listing him as questionable. He got injured in the Notre Dame game, didn't play against Utah. He's been really struggling with the ankle. He had a huge game last year against ASU, ran for 301 yards, which I think is still a school record.
Three touchdowns in the game,
He killed him. The question I have, and I was kind of surprised to hear you say you're okay with this, N'Keal Harry is...
I know, and I'm probably in the minority here.
Is putting up numbers that are just not befitting of one of the best wide receivers in the country, and I just wonder at some point, don't they have to use that weapon a little bit more than they're using? It's not like they're winning games this way. They've lost 3 of their last 4.
They've given themselves chances to win all of these games. They've been all those games that they've lost. They've had chances to win because they've committed to running the football and keeping the other team's opposing offense off the field and trying to play good defense. And Danny Gonzalez's defense played a little bit better. They probably would have won some of those games. Or if some of the Pac-12 officiating had been a little bit better, they might have won some of those games. I understand. I'm just saying, I do think that they need to get N'Keal Harry the ball more, but I don't know that you make him the focal point of the offense. I think the running game has to be the focal point of the offense.
All I'm saying is get him the ball more. I'm not saying make him the focal point. I'm not saying throw him the ball, target him 15 times a game and do everything you can. That's not what I'm saying. In his last 3 games, he's got 13 catches for 166 yards.
It's got to be better.
Man, you can do better than that. You can do better than that, Herm.
Right, you got to do better than that. I'm with you. You have to do better than that. But in order to win these games, their philosophy and what they believe is that they've got to run the ball and play good defense. And they're passing attack. And Manny Wilkins is doing a good job. Like, if you look at Manny's touchdown interception ratio, it's very good. It's very good. But they don't want to be a team that, like a Todd Graham team that was playing really fast and, you know, throwing the ball all over the place. And they did have good running backs last year in Bellage and DeMario. But they want to run the ball with Dino Benjamin behind their offensive line, control the clock, and try to keep opposing offenses off the field. It's kept them in all these games. They've had a chance to win all of these games.
But it's not winning them any of these games. They've lost 3 of their last 4.
But they've had a chance to win all these games.
I mean, it's... All right, a chance. I don't
disagree with the philosophy. I think the way that they're playing is the right way to play. I think it's the right way to play. Do I think N'Keal Harry needs to be more involved? Yes. But I also don't want it to turn into a, like, if you look at the run-pass ratio, it needs to be predominantly run for this football team.
Okay.
It needs to be a predominantly run oriented attack.
Okay, but okay, again, by you're taking my take and you're projecting it to the extreme. I'm not suggesting the extreme for N'Keal Harry. I'm just saying more. It's kind of like the David Johnson thing. I mean, really? It's almost exactly like the David Johnson thing.
Okay, I'm not disagreeing with that.
Really? You've got one of the best weapons and you're not going to line them up out there. You just refuse. You just won't do it. And if I feel the same way about N'Keal Harry. My God, you've got one. And what I'm afraid is going to happen is that when he goes pro after this year and he goes to the NFL, you're going to look back at N'Keal Harry. Not you, John Gambadoro. You just in general.
And say that they didn't get more out of him.
And say that they wasted that. They wasted it. They wasted him. They wasted that. They wasted their opportunity. They should have gotten more out of a player that skilled. And I just would hate to see it go to waste, especially. I would agree with you more if this method was winning them more football games.
They lost to Washington. They ran the ball 40 times. They passed it 27. They had a chance to. They might have won that game if Smith doesn't fumble the ball at the Washington 40. They may have won that game. I understand what you're saying. If they're going to throw it 27 times, should they target N'Keal Harry 8 to 10? Probably. But I still think the run-pass ratio has to be greater for the run in order to be in these games. I don't want to see 40 passes and 27 rushes because I think that's going to have you lose by 21 points to some of these teams.
We'll see if Bryce Love ends up playing tomorrow. I'm assuming that he's going to. This Stanford team...
If he does play, I don't know how effective he's going to be. He hasn't been effective all year.
No, even before he got hurt, he hasn't been very effective. The Stanford team is just so different looking than the ones that we're accustomed to. They're not running the ball with any success. And again, that was before the injuries to Bryce Love. They're not running the ball the way we're used to seeing a Stanford team run it, and yet they control their destiny in the Pac-12 North. If they went out, they're going to go to the Pac-12 title game. They're in complete control of what they want to do. They don't need any help at all. They just need to win.
Because Utah's already got two losses. They lost to Utah. Their other loss is to Notre Dame. They won for their first four games. Then they lost to Notre Dame. They lost to Utah. Utah's already got two losses. So, yeah, they can control their destiny. And that's David Shaw. 73 wins, 3 Pac-12 championships, 5 Pac-12 North titles in the last 7 years. That's what Stanford does. They win the North, and they usually win. And they win some Pac-12 championships. But this is a much different Stanford team than any of the teams he's had before, because this is not Toby Gerhart and Christian McCaffrey and Bryce Love from last year. They're averaging 80 yards a game on the ground.
Yeah.
They used to average 200 yards a game on the ground. 200. Now they're averaging 80. This is not the same Stanford team we're accustomed to.
Hope we don't see it tomorrow night. I hope we don't see the same Stanford team we're accustomed to tomorrow night, because if Bryce Love is healthy enough to make that happen, this ASU defense is good, but we'll find out if they're that good.
It can be a lot better, and that's what Danny Gonzalez has been harping on, because, you know, even if you look at the game last week, I mean, Lucas had a bad game. He got burned a couple of times really bad in that game, about 2 weeks ago, and a loss to Colorado. He got burned on some really big plays, and they just ran out of gas at the end of the game.
He is facing the team that fired him last season. Does Mike McCoy need to beat the Broncos for him to keep his gig in Arizona? That seems to be the question on everybody's mind with the Cardinals. Talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show. So we got Vinny Marotta sitting here, the co-host of the very popular and critically acclaimed Bickley Marotta Show. He's also the PA announcer for the Phoenix Suns. He'll be joining us on our Suns Roundtable. And it was him on his show that originated what we're calling tomorrow night's Cardinals-Broncos game, the Pink Slip Bowl.
The Pink Slip Bowl.
It was a Vinny Marotta creation right there. The Pink Slip Bowl tomorrow for the Cardinals and the Broncos. Vance Joseph under fire. Mike McCoy under fire. But you know what? You kind of answered the question. I'll ask it again.
Okay.
In a tease setting up this segment, you answered it at the end of last segment, which thanks for spoiling the tease, but here it is. I mean, really, people are like, well, I don't need to listen to that next segment. Gambo already asked the question, for goodness sakes. Does Mike McCoy need to beat the Broncos for him to keep his new gig in Arizona?
Well, the way you worded that is a little different. Okay.
I read it.
Is that how you read it?
That's exactly how I read it.
Does he need to win the game?
Does Mike McCoy need to beat the Broncos for him to keep his new gig in Arizona? That is exactly, and you said
No.
And everybody tuned out because you killed the tease.
Because I don't think that this game matters.
You don't think it matters?
I mean, if it shouldn't. This game should not matter. You've had six games of Mike McCoy. The offense is the worst in the NFL. They can't get 300 yards in any game. I mean, David Johnson's having an awful year. Larry Fitzgerald's having an awful year. The offensive line, I mean, everybody. No skill position players are doing well. Nobody. We've got six games of this. Six games. I mean, do you really need this one game to determine what you've got in Mike McCoy?
You shouldn't. You shouldn't. But for a rookie embattled head coach, right, who's been wearing it all season long, all right, if they come out, and I'm just speaking hypothetically here, I tend to agree with you on this one, that it shouldn't go down like this, but part of me is wondering that if the Cardinals come out tomorrow and put up a bunch of points and a bunch of yards on Denver, and they win big and they put up a bunch of points, that the rookie head coach and the organization, rather than using that moment to fire the embattled offensive coordinator, will instead go, okay, let's hit the reset button for a second. Let's all take a breath.
That worked.
Everything looked okay. Let's let it ride for a little bit. Let's give it another shot. Let's give it another chance. Now, personally, I think the chances of that happening are pretty slim in terms of tomorrow night. I don't know if the Cardinals are going to put up
so
a bunch of yards.
So you're about to walk away from that blackjack table, and all of a sudden you hit.
Exactly. Hey, yeah, I got some chips. Let's play it. Let's play a little bit longer.
Let that ride.
I was just about ready to go up to my room.
I was about ready.
And call it a night. But, man, I just hit two blackjacks in a row, and I got a stack of chips. Let's play a little bit longer.
All right, let's see.
Let's go. I'm not disagreeing.
It's inevitable you're going to lose those chips.
I'm not disagreeing with you. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. So,
it's inevitable
brother,
you're going to lose
brother,
those chips.
Brother, you don't gamble, but you know more about it than you think you do. Because, yes, yeah.
it's inevitable you're going to lose those chips.
I agree with you that shouldn't be the thinking, but there is part of me that believes that if that happens tomorrow night, that will be the thinking. Especially for an organization, man, that is just looking for anything positive to build upon. And if Mike McCoy gives them that tomorrow night, there is part of me that believes they will not walk away from that, at least not yet, not now, if he gives them that tomorrow night.
Yeah,
if he will.
You know what? It's possible. I mean, Denver's defense the last 2 weeks against the Jets and the Rams gave up almost 600 yards rushing in those two games, 7 yards per carry. It is possible that they could have success, but I think it would be more an indication of how bad Denver is than all of a sudden Mike McCoy figured it out.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. I don't think we're going to come. If we come in here on Friday and the Cardinals had a good game offensively, am I going to sit there and say, oh, McCoy finally figured it out. He knows what he's doing. Or am I going to say, they just did what the other teams have done to Denver's defense the last few weeks and just gashed them? I don't think it would be. I think it would be more the fact that Denver's got a terrible defense.
We've referenced this article many times today because there was a lot of good information. I read it this morning on the Athletic's website, and I thought, man, we've got to talk about this today. This is from Scott Bordeaux over at the Athletic, who's the beat writer now, covers the Cardinals for that website, pointed out that it's been almost 11 months to the day that Denver let McCoy go. This time a year ago, right? They had lost six straight. When you compare Denver's offensive numbers then to the Cardinals' offensive numbers now, it's hard to believe we're even having this conversation, really. At the time they let him go, Denver's 17 offensive touchdowns were tied with the Browns for the second worst in the league. At the time they let him go, the Broncos were 24th in scoring. The Cardinals right now are last in the league in yards, first downs, third down conversion percentage, and time of possession. They haven't had a single game where they've had more than 269 yards of total offense. They have scored more than 17 points only one time. They're 1,323 yards, fewest by an NFL team through six games since 2009.
Think about that for a second.
I know. Nearly 10 years.
Fewest yards in almost 10 years.
Fewest plays run since 2005. Lowest third down conversion rate since 2010.
How much do you think those numbers are going to change in one game against the Denver Broncos? They're still going to be the worst
offense. They're still going to be low. They're still going to be maybe not historically low, depending on what happens, but they're still going to be low. Again, I agree with you. I think that It just sort of feels like the fate has already been sealed here a little bit. But again, I'm going to say what I said yesterday and what I believe with all of my heart. This is not about these numbers. All right. This Mike McCoy decision is not about the worst third down conversion rate since 2010, the fewest plays since 2005. It's about Josh Rosen.
Do you believe in McCoy being Rosen's mentor?
It's about Josh Rosen. That's what this is about. It's about whether Mike McCoy is the guy to get the very best out of Josh Rosen. And if you fundamentally don't believe in that, decision's easy.
Well, I think that's
decision's easy.
Right. And that decision. Look, the decision might be made already. It's a short week. I mean, you said this, and you might be right, that if it wasn't a short week, maybe they would have made the decision after last week.
I said that on Monday, and I believe it. If it weren't for the short week, they might have done it on Monday.
All right. So, I mean, if you were going to do it Monday, why would you change your mind in 3 days? Because they had one good game against Denver.
I just don't know how they over there are going to react if things go really, really well for that offense tomorrow. I just don't know. I know how I'm going to feel about it. God knows I know how you're going to feel about it. I don't know how they're all going to react to it over there. How will the head coach feel? How will the GM feel?
Easy last year to fire McCoy in Denver. They had lost six straight games.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it is, I'm sure it's more, I'm not saying it's easier, but probably more justifiable to do it after a loss and another bad game. It's okay, can't take this anymore. And you do like, if it does work and they have success, then maybe some people would sit there and say, well, maybe you weren't patient enough. Maybe you weren't patient enough. Maybe this offense needed some time to get going. Maybe this can work.
We'll see. I mean, if they struggle again tomorrow night, and I do wonder about this running game, like we've said many times, if they can't get it going against this Denver Broncos team, it is fair to wonder if they are ever going to get it going with the way things are currently aligned. That Denver run defense is so bad.
Well, yeah, I mean, you without Mike Iupati, Justin Pugh is a game-time decision. He's going to warm up, see if he can block anyone, and then they'll decide whether he can play or not.
Yeah.
So he's a game-time decision. And so from that perspective, I mean, you could be without your two starting offensive guards.
Yeah. The Suns have a new coach, a new front office, the number one overall pick. Expectations for 2018-2019. Our roundtable coverage begins next here on the flagship home of the Suns, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.